my name is Ida Bligh. I'm a Woolly Woolly woman from the central Burnett town of Eidsvoll. I am a registered nurse. I currently work as a nurse navigator for Queensland Health at Rockhampton Community Health.
Ida, thank you very much for joining us for a chat and happy International Nurses Day.
Thank you for having me.
Ida, you've been a nurse now for 14 years, but before you studied nursing, you spent a couple of years picking and packing fruit and working on a cattle property, mustering alongside your dad, your brother and your uncle. What was it then that attracted you to nursing?
What attracted me to nursing was that there were other nurses and teachers and other women in my family who went away and studied and, you know, they had that education and then they had those careers. So those women had sort of inspired me to go on and do nursing. And nursing is something that can take you anywhere as well.
Ida, you studied in Brisbane at QUT and after you graduated, you stayed in the city and spent 18 months nursing at a private hospital. What happened then?
It was just by chance that I ended up at Warrabinda, a Indigenous community west of Rockhampton, 2 hours west of Rockhampton. I had a pretty bad horse riding accident and I had some time off at home in Eidsvoll, and that kind of put a bit of clarity as to I didn't want to return back to the city. I wanted to stay in the bush and stay close to home and family and stuff like that. Warrabinda, by chance I had family out there and they've kind of suggested, why don't you just go in and see the Don and have a chat? And I did. And they offered me a job.
So, Ida, that was how you started your nursing career in rural and remote health. Can you tell us a little about your nursing experience in Warrabinda?
So, Warrabinda, like I said, it's an Indigenous community, but we also, I mean, there's a lot of grazing. It's cattle country and mining country as well that surrounds the community. So, you know, we do get people from outside or from properties and from other towns. It's a huge range of presentations we get, a lot of primary healthcare stuff. You know, we're the one-stop shop a lot of the time for a lot of people. And, if people's animals get hurt or something like that, you know, like they bring them in or they, you know, ask for advice and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's really diverse, right through from your babies and then your antenatal care as well through to pediatrics, adults, adolescents, also palliative care.
Ida, last year you became a nurse navigator in Rockhampton. Can you tell us about that role?
I've only just recently started in the nurse navigator role last November, but there have been other Indigenous navigator roles all around Queensland. But this is my first time in this role. I am very fortunate enough that I still get to liaise and take on patients from Warrabinda. So it's really nice to still have that connection with the community. But what I do as a nurse navigator, we link people in with services, home care providers. It's a broad community range. You're not just a nurse navigator for a specific ward or area as such. You are a generalist, basically. And, you know, I even sit with people when we do teleconferences or when we do consults with a specialist that's travelled up from Brisbane for the day. I sit with patients. I relay over if they don't understand anything that the doctor's saying to them or if they're unsure or, you know, I do follow up. You know, I explain all that kind of stuff back to the patient and I take that information and I take it back to their patient's GP as well, or pharmacist if there's a change in medications and stuff like that. So we follow up all that broad range of care. I really enjoy the role. It's a great experience and I'm very thankful to be exposed to it because my background was a clinical background and emergency and primary healthcare background, whereas this is a totally different role. I've taken a step back from doing all the clinical side of stuff and I've taken on a role to organise and put in pathways for patients to help them in the long run, I guess, yeah, for their health.
And finally, Ida, do you have a message for others, particularly young Indigenous people, considering a career in nursing?
My biggest message to Indigenous kids is, you know, home is always going to be there. You can always come back home. That's the big message. And that's the big thing for our mobs. Like, a lot of Indigenous kids don't want to travel. They don't want to go away from home, because the Indigenous families are so family orientated that I don't want to leave that bubble. But I just want to tell the kids that, you know, you can always go back and home will always be there.
Hello, my name's Anthony Auditore, and I'm the Nurse Unit Manager for 2C Neurosciences Unit at Princess Alexandra Hospital.
Anthony, you've been a nurse for more than two decades, and you'd been nursing in New York for about 7 years when COVID-19 reached the United States. Can you tell us about your experience then?
COVID-19 in New York, as was reported on all the news, was a devastating time for New York. I worked at Mount Sinai, Queens, in Queens, New York. The first patient was admitted into our hospital around March 13th of 2020. It was a very rapid onslaught of COVID-19 in New York. First patient admitted in March 13 to a 150-bed hospital. And by the beginning to mid-April, there was 250 COVID-19 positive patients. The experience itself was extremely difficult on many, many levels. It was difficult to see how COVID-19 affected the patients. We've always been told that COVID-19 mainly affected the older patient population. That certainly wasn't the case in New York. It affected everybody. So that was difficult. It was difficult from a staff point of view, managing staff. You know, the horrors that we saw were just too difficult to describe. Being able to provide that support for them was challenging. So it was a difficult time.
Anthony, you'd been nursing for 20 years at that stage, as we said. Could anything have prepared you for what you were experiencing?
No, I don't think anything could. The amount of sickness, the amount of death that we saw during that initial wave of COVID-19 in New York City is comparable to nothing I can describe. It was a trying time, and I don't think anybody could be prepared for that. Looking back on that time, we probably are a little bit more prepared if something like that there happens again. But at the time, no, nothing could have prepared us for what we saw.
What were the days like for you, and what were you seeing?
There was no typical day. Every day was different. One day that really comes to mind is walking into the hospital at about 5 a.m. and just seeing patients on the floor, nurses doing CPR on them, patients being left, and nurses and other medical staff moving on to other patients. As I said, something that is too difficult to explain to somebody who's never, ever seen it. How the staff coped, that was extremely difficult. 98% of my staff got COVID-19 and were off work for a long time. Colleagues of mine did not actually survive COVID-19 after they contracted it. The staff were scared. They were exhausted. They were working long, long hours. It was something I can't even describe.
Anthony, before COVID started, you decided to return to Australia in April 2020, but you ended up staying longer. Why did you decide to stay?
Well, 7 years is a long time to live anywhere. I lived 7 years in New York, and I formed some very strong relationships with my colleagues. When COVID started, although I had planned to come home, I decided it important to stay. There was no way I could reconcile coming home and leaving my colleagues that I spent so much time with to fight this awful virus. So I made the decision to stay and help them, and hope that help that I gave did make some sort of effect.
When you got back to Australia, you had 2 weeks of quarantine. What was it like to be back? Was it a relief?
It was a relief, I guess, but it was also difficult because for months and months, New York was shut down. Stores were closed, boarded up. There was nobody in Manhattan. Everywhere you went, you needed to wear a mask. And to come home and seeing people pretty much going on with their day-to-day life, no masks, being able to go out to restaurants, out to shopping centres was it was difficult to see. I actually felt a little bit frightened, you know, walking next to somebody without a mask. Yeah, it was difficult coming home. So, yes, it was a relief, but it was also a strange phenomenon.
And, Anthony, you've stayed in touch with your colleagues from the States. How are they going now?
Well, it's certainly not like it was 12, 15 months ago. They still have cases of COVID-19. There's still restrictions preventing them from doing what we here in Australia take for granted. But they're going well. They're going well. They're a resilient bunch, New Yorkers, that's for certain.
Going back to the start of your career, Anthony, had you always wanted to be a nurse?
I don't know if I always wanted to be a nurse. I don't think it was my first decision, but it certainly was my last decision and my best decision.
And for anyone considering a career in nursing, Anthony, what's your advice?
My advice is do it. Don't look back. There's so many opportunities personally, professionally. In America, they've always said this here for the last decade, if not longer, nursing is the most trusted profession. So you'll be joining a group of people that are just wonderful. So join, become a nurse.
Hi, I'm Topaz Stringfellow. I'm a registered nurse in infectious diseases at the Gold Coast University Hospital.
Topaz, thank you so much for joining us and happy International Nurses Day.
Thank you.
You've been nursing now for around 4 years. You studied here locally at Griffith. Yep. Where was your first position?
My graduate position is in infectious diseases, and so I have been there since with secondments along the way on different adventures.
Topaz, you've had a really interesting start to your career. It's certainly not been boring. Last year you took a deployment to Melbourne to help out during the COVID response there. How did that come about?
I had been involved in COVID since being an infectious disease nurse since the pandemic was officially declared in February. And so we had done a lot of training in regards to management of COVID positives, but in Queensland we hadn't really seen a lot of patients. There was a request from our fever clinics here on the Gold Coast for some infectious disease nurses to go and assist with the setup and rollout of these clinics. And so it was just simply testing. We had Ruby Princess travellers come through, which was a very interesting time because it was the first time we really did see members from the community that were COVID positive, unlike the Wuhan tour group, which were picked up reasonably quickly and isolated. So I had been working in the fever clinic, and we, you know, at the point I was asked to go on deployment to Melbourne, didn't have any community transmission. We hadn't had any significant spikes. And so when they asked me to go to Melbourne, it was, you know, an easy yes, because I knew that I had the experience and a little bit of knowledge, and it would be a great opportunity.
And you went for a month. What were you doing in that month and where were you based?
When we arrived to Melbourne, things were starting to escalate quite quickly, and they had about 70 cases of community transmission a day at that point, which we thought was a lot at the time. And coming from Queensland, we were like, wow, like that's, you know, concerning, but little did we know. And so we worked out of the Royal Melbourne Hospital, and every day we would meet and they would send us to a location. We were deployed to the public housing towers in Melbourne, and that was a very challenging situation because they estimated there was about a 35% COVID positive rate. And so we would don our full PPE and enter these towers for 4 hours at a time and undertake mass testing. And then there was quite a few outbreaks of staff members in the hospital. They needed to undertake mass testing of their staff. We separated into symptomatic staff and asymptomatic staff. And as we know with COVID, about 80% of infections can be asymptomatic. And so things like daily testing and logistically, it's just a big project. And so the focus was always testing.
Topaz, around day 22 of your deployment to Melbourne, your temperature was higher than normal. What happened from there?
So it was when I was exiting the hospital after closing a staff swabbing clinic that the new infrared camera had picked up that my temperature was 37.7. And I was unsure at the time because I had been working full PPE for about 10 hours. And as most clinicians listening that's been in COVID PPE know, it's a very hot, uncomfortable situation. And so I had been in this PPE for 10 hours with, you know, changing at different intervals, but a significant portion of the day. I felt well, and on a second temperature screen, the thermometer recorded my temperature as normal. So I was a bit unsure. So I went to my accommodation and isolated and asked my colleague that I had travelled with to pick up a thermometer from me, which is difficult to source in Melbourne at this time, and just drop it outside of my room and I would isolate myself until I had more information. That night, I recorded temperatures up to 39.4, which is clinically a great temperature. And I had headaches. I started having body sweats. I had muscle aches, and I knew that I had to get tested first thing in the morning and was very concerned at that point that I had contracted COVID. So about 36 hours later, which is not a bad turnaround time for Melbourne, given, you know, we're in the height of the pandemic there, I was informed by the infectious disease doctor at the Royal Melbourne Hospital that I had been detected and I was indeed positive for COVID, which brings a wide variety of emotions, concern that you've infected someone else, and I guess the stigma about being a healthcare worker that is positive with COVID. You really do question yourself and your actions and think about every different angle about how you could have been infected, and obviously concerned that you're now positive and another fatality. But, you know, it was a risk that I had accepted being deployed to Melbourne, that it was a good chance, knowing that healthcare workers around the world have been, you know, at higher risk of getting infected with COVID, that it was certainly a risk. But it's hard to say that you accept a risk, but when that risk is a reality, it's a bit of a different emotion.
Around day six, you were medevaced back to Queensland.
Yeah.
What sort of support did you have?
I was so lucky that everyone involved in my care, from the staff at the Royal Melbourne Hospital that I went and worked with on my deployment, to the staff that I work with at Queensland Health, from the very top, they were in constant contact with me, my executives at the hospital, my nurse unit manager, the infectious disease doctors that I normally work with. So very quickly they, you know, when I called them to inform them about the diagnosis, it wasn't one of judgment or anything. It was just of complete support, and that they would take care of me and that they were here to support me and make sure that I had the best care available. Jeanette Young actually did contact me and inform me that she would be organising a medevac flight for me to come home to Queensland, which I was very thankful for, because at that point Melbourne was in a difficult situation. There was about 700 positive cases a day. I'm alone in a hotel room. My colleagues were due to fly back in a few days, and so I would essentially be alone in Melbourne, positive and feeling pretty unwell. And although I can't see my family or friends being positive, it is nice to still be in a community that you know and to be supported. So I was very thankful for that.
And so you came back and were a patient in the ward that you worked on? Or?
I was. And so there was a lot of people involved in getting me home, and it's not logistically an easy task. And so an ambulance collected me from my hotel, and there was an amazing crew on the life flight, and I was their first COVID positive patient that they had transported. They had trained exceptionally well for the event that they were asked and deployed to do such a job. But I must say I'm in awe that they undertook that assignment. Working with COVID, you know, you do put yourself and your family ultimately at risk, and so I'm very thankful for them. And I was brought back to the Gold Coast University Hospital, to the ward that I normally work on. And I was met by one of the infectious disease doctors, Dr. Gerard, who I've worked with for a number of years now, and Dr. Kylie Alcorn, another infectious disease doctor here, and some wonderful nurses. You know, was just met with complete support, and it was really lovely.
And Topaz, how long were you in hospital?
So I was in hospital for 6 days, and by the time that I was released, I believe it was probably day 13 or 14 of being confirmed positive. And as we've gone along throughout this pandemic, we have changed our criteria for release from isolation. And that's just in, you know, light of emerging evidence. And so at the point, if you were unwell enough to require hospitalisation, and unfortunately, you know, I was quite unwell, then you had to serve an additional 10 days in isolation before you could be released into the community. So after my release from hospital, I went to 10 days in a quarantine hotel. And then I was released to the community, and I opted to spend a week just relaxing at home, catching up with my family and just kind of recuperating. And then I returned to work.
And when you were well enough to return to work, which area did you go back into?
So when I went back initially, I returned to my ward, and then I applied for a secondment to infection control. And the reason is that they were getting ready to set up the first vaccination clinic. We were the first Pfizer hub here in Queensland. And I feel like I've been through all the stages of COVID, from early on working with COVID positive to testing to Melbourne. And I really felt that it was a grand finale. And as an infectious disease clinician, we know the value that a vaccine can provide and how important it is that we do it right, that we have good community support and confidence in this vaccine.
Since then, you've been helping set up other clinics. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yes. So I was called and asked if I would actually be happy to support a rapid response vaccination team. And originally the deployment was to a few different Queensland locations. And then one day they called and they said, actually, are you happy to fly out to Central West or Longreach in particular tomorrow? And so most deployments with Queensland Health do happen quite quickly. And so as clinicians, we typically just say, yes, that sounds wonderful. And so I went to Central West and have been all around the outback to different remote locations and towns. And the community has been incredible, and they really do have a fantastic team out there that have been rolling out the vaccine to these communities. And I even did some home visits when I was there, and there was this one sweet little old lady who's on home oxygen. And so I went to her house with a paramedic to administer her vaccine. And she had a sign on her door that said, you know, please don't enter, I've been isolating. And when I went in and spoke to her, she's not left her property. She's gone, yeah, you know, it's real, so it's a reasonable property, but she's not left her property in quite a few months because of the COVID pandemic. And she was so excited to receive her vaccine so that she can get back to normal. And it's just, you know, seeing the worst of COVID really in Melbourne for myself, to being able to give someone a vaccine so they can have that confidence that they can go out again, really was a special moment.
And where to now? I believe you're on your way somewhere in the next couple of weeks.
Yes. So at the moment, hopefully going to Torres and Cape in a few weeks' time to help roll out Pfizer there and some very remote locations and islands up there. So I think it'd be an incredible opportunity.
You've done so much in 4 years of nursing. Could you ever have envisaged your first 4 years to be so jam-packed with experiences?
In university, when we're training, and you know, people do tell you that with nursing there's all these opportunities, and it's kind of hard to, I guess, realise that at the beginning. But I never could have imagined I would have had these adventures, and I am grateful that I have been able to go on them, and hopefully I can continue to do some more and build my knowledge and skills.
Tavaz, I'll just take you back to when you were in Melbourne. You worked with a lot of nurses there, a lot of health professionals from a variety of backgrounds. Can you tell me a little bit about who you worked with?
So I did work with quite a diverse group, which was incredible. There was a number of their local clinicians, doctors and nurses who had been, you know, dealing with this emerging situation as it was unfolding. There was also members of the ADF. There was paramedics from South Australia and other nurses from around the state that had answered this call that Victoria had put out for help. I was one of many who had responded, and well, I think that, you know, I'm highlighted here. I really do want to acknowledge their hard work and their dedication. And I really felt for my colleagues in Melbourne, and, you know, they could not have been more thankful that people had responded to their call for help. And many had actually told me that they had responded for Queensland's Victoria for help when we had bushfires. And so it was really nice that we were able to return the favour in that way. But for these nurses and for nurses around the world, I knew that I had an end date in Melbourne. It was, you know, a 1 month deployment with a possibility of extension, but that was up to me really. I could leave really when I wanted to. But these nurses, that was their reality. That was their communities that were being affected. That was their local nursing homes that had outbreaks. And it really, you know, I was in awe of the work they were doing, but it really does add to the challenge and the complexities of what they're dealing with and doing the absolute best that they can. And so for International Nurses Day, for me, it is the unsung heroes out there that haven't had the acknowledgement, and the other paramedics and ADF who also put their, you know, lives on hold to answer the call for help, and the nurses around the world that have lost their lives to COVID. I think it's really important that we continue to acknowledge their hard work and sacrifice.
Topaz, you're now also involved in a number of clinical trials. Can you tell us about any of those?
I sure can. Most of them are run through Griffith University. One is looking at my immune response to COVID and how long my natural antibodies will last. COVID is a relatively new disease, and so we're unsure how long antibodies will last for. And so it was based on the advice of my doctor that I receive the Pfizer vaccination. So I have done that. And then the second one is looking at why women hold antibodies less than men. And so men do actually hold them for quite a bit longer. Another one is the vaccination development that Griffith University is undertaking. So they took quite a few samples to aid with that. And the last one is the Ascot convalescent plasma trial. And so essentially what it is receiving plasma from previously infected patients in the hope that their antibodies help your body to develop an immune response. So I was very fortunate that when I was brought back to Queensland and I met the clinical criteria of being moderately unwell, I was eligible to be enrolled in this trial. So I was the first one in Queensland to be enrolled in the convalescent plasma trial. And I can't be more thankful that I was at a hospital with the staff, knowledge and resources to be able to set up this clinical trial in record time. It's not simply of saying, let's give someone this plasma from someone previously with COVID. There is a lot of involvement, and I know they worked around the clock to make this happen. And I can't be more thankful for all the members of the infectious disease team, the research team and clinicians involved in making that possible for me.
Topaz, looking ahead 12, 18 months when hopefully COVID is behind us, it will be strange for you to go back to a normal pace, I guess, of nursing, because it sounds like you're very involved and very active in doing everything you can at the moment for the response.
I am certainly now more than ever very passionate about the response and the vaccination rollout in particular. I think it is absolutely essential in seeing our community through this pandemic. and it will be difficult to go back to a regular pace. And thankfully, nursing is one of those careers where you don't have to. You can pick your next journey and your next adventure. And so I really look forward to what's next.
Well, I don't think this is the last we'll be hearing of Topaz. So thank you for talking to us and happy International Nurses Day. And thank you also for the amazing job you've done to keep us all safe during the pandemic.
Thank you.